How to stop our needless overconsumption of cheaper and cheaper clothes that pollute the planet. France's Senate passing a bill to curb advertising and tax pollution on fast fashion, with lawmakers even talking up the distinction of ultra-fast fashion, garments made in a hurry, more and more using polyester and other polluting plastics, shipped at warp speed by plane, and which fall apart after just a few washes. Has the bill been partially stripped bare, though? The new version seems to include a carve-out for European giants that peddle cheap clothes, the focus now mostly on China. In fact, Europeans, like the Trump administration, are working to close the tax loophole on the kind of small parcels that go out by the millions from small garment factories in China. And while the likes of Shein and Temu enroll big names to lobby, including a former European commissioner and a former interior minister of France, we'll ask, who's winning the hearts and minds of consumers in this battle over an industry that surveys say represents up to 10% of humanity's carbon footprint? Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking, clothes at what cost? With us, journalist Dana Thomas, the author of the bestseller Fashionopolis. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
His advocacy group, part of the Stop Fast Fashion Coalition, Pierre Condamine, who has got a pretty cool title, Overproduction Campaigner.
Yes.
Thanks for being with us. For the advocacy group Friends of the Earth, Les Amis de la Terre, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Malo Bourrel-Wieger is Director of Public Affairs at the Sustainable Business Association Mouvement Impact France. And you represent, what, some 30,000 companies?
30,000 companies, yes.
From a local baker to the national rail company, you said?
Yes, of course.
All right. We'll be joined from Nice shortly, where he's attending that United Nations Conference on the Ocean by Danish member of the European Parliament, Rasmus Norgvits. By the way, on the go, you can always listen to the show wherever podcasts are streamed. 1 year after France's National Assembly, the Senate unanimously approving the measure, which now goes to a joint committee of the lower and upper houses of parliament. Just a few figures. The French currently add an estimated 48 clothing items per person a year to their wardrobe. That's five times more than was the case two decades ago. 35 clothing items are thrown away every second. Now, this new version of the bill leaves out French and European brands such as Zara, H&M, Kiabi, Decathlon, and instead focuses on the Chinese.
This law, as it stands, will make it possible to really put the brakes on these Chinese giants that are invading us without any controls, any norms, and without paying any taxes in France.
Dana Thomas, this bill that passed the Senate, is it a good news story?
It is good news. It's still a bit toothless compared to what we really need, but it's a first step. Fashion is one of the least regulated businesses out there. California has passed two laws in the last couple of years to try to deal with overconsumption and throwing away of clothes and also wage theft of sweatshops in downtown L.A. But the EU has passed a bunch of laws where they're trying to do things like traceability. We're all going to have digital IDs in our clothes to say where they came from, what they're made of, and where they've been after you've gotten rid of it, coming in the next year or two. But this is like really targeting the biggest problem of all, which is waste, throwing stuff away and selling way too much.
Way too much. Just give us an idea of how much.
Well, that's one of the reasons we need this. No one really knows how much clothing is produced every year. They say roughly 100 billion items, new items, but I've seen between 80 billion and 120, so that's why we say 100. But nobody has to report how much they produce, so nobody has to, we don't have those figures. And we buy 60% more than we did just 15 years ago, which is kind of mind-boggling, especially when you have COVID in the middle of that 15 years where we weren't buying anything or producing anything or wearing anything. And we throw away so much. Only 2 or 3% is recycled. A dump truck of clothing goes into a dump, into landfill, every second of the day. of used clothing. We wear garments an average of 7 times before they're thrown away, and in China, it's been reported to be 3 times.
Pierre Gondamine, you heard Dana Thomas there mentioning COVID. Kind of was an accelerator, wasn't it, for fast fashion?
Well, it sort of stopped during COVID. So we were like, maybe, you know, it's really going to slow down. But right after COVID...
But we got in the habit of buying stuff online.
Yeah, it was mostly more like decoration thing. But when it comes to clothes, it's indeed slowed down like for 2020, 2021. And then it went back even higher than the levels before. And we saw those, you know, Chinese giants just like Shein and Temu appearing at that period. And so, yeah, we saw that after 2022... We went back to the level of 2019 and then even higher. And now we are in France, we are at 3.3 billion textile items that are bought every year.
Okay, so lawmakers keen to emphasize the term ultra fast fashion, which is all about, well, expediency in the design, the production, expediency in the delivery. You get influencers in social media marketing, faster supply chain use. Production in small batches, small sweatshops, as Dana Thomas was saying, and micro-trending. So you pay attention to what consumers want, and then at the sweatshop, they change what they're doing. What do you think of this term, ultra-fast fashion? Is that legitimate, or is it just fast fashion?
It is fast fashion. It is fast fashion, but the marketing practices are sort of exaggerated to the maximum. But if you look at the social and environmental conditions of production, they're the same, basically. And you even mentioned that they ship extremely fast through plane shipping. But if you look at Zara, that is considered, you know, like European fast fashion, traditional fast fashion, they also ship a lot with planes. So what they do, basically, is that they accelerate the trend of fashion renewal, which is fast fashion, but they take it to the higher level. But the condition of production are the same, basically.
You mentioned Zara, the Spanish company, which has been accused of using cotton from Xinjiang province in China, where the Uyghurs are being oppressed. Let me ask you, though. So this bill by the French Senate, just how big a carve-out is it for the likes of Zara?
We don't know yet. It's very blurry. There are technical details that need to be worked out, and that will be done during the joint committee. But... what we've seen are public positioning from decision makers saying that they don't want to impact Zara, H&M, Primark, and so on, which is the issue for us. The goal of the bill, the original motive was to have a regulation of the whole sector towards sustainable practices. But if you narrow the perimeter, the scope of the law to just Shein and Temu, you make it a protectionist law. But more important, you make it a law that protects European fast fashion, such as Zara, H&M, Primark, because they won't be sort of bothered by Shein and Temu. And we know that those companies, not only they have like disastrous environmental and social impact, but if you look at the economic impact they have in France, in the EU, it's also bad because the rise of fast fashion in the textile sector and in the clothing, in the retail sector, also had an impact.
Malo Bourel-Wigger, do the members of your association make a distinction between European fast fashion and Chinese fast fashion?
I would tend to say that it's not really the debates. We can talk about the terms, the definition of it is fast fashion, it is ultra fast fashion. What is really important now is to have in mind that there are reasons why we have this bill in France. You know, for many years, for decades right now, the situation of the textile sector in France is very difficult. The companies suffered, the factories are closing, and this trend has been accelerated this last month with the closure, with the financial difficulties of a few, let's say, famous and well-known French brands, such as Camailleux or Naf Naf, for instance. And why do we have this situation for quite a long time at some points? The reason is, let's say, very simple, and it applies on the industrial, on the textile sector, but also on a lot of other sectors. We are in an economic system that gives a competitive advantage of doing wrong. When you are a company, when you are a business, especially in the textile sector, you have a competitive advantage to externalize your social and environmental costs and your environmental and social production, which leads to a lot of delocalization, the closing of these companies.
So outsourcing,
Of course. So we have this bill also because we need, and it is the voice of our companies too, that suffer every day, and it's very important to have very quickly the adoption of this law, to have a protection for these companies, to protect our jobs, to protect our companies.
And when you hear Pierre Condamine saying he's worried a little bit because we don't know whether it'll be how this will apply to European giants that also do fast fashion.
No, it's.
Do you share that worry?
Of course. I would tend to say that we should make a distinction between two proposals of this bill. The first one is the prohibition of publicity for
that's huge
for fast fashion or ultra fast fashion companies, and there is, let's say, a flu on what will be the definition chosen by the governments, and it could only include, and as Pierre said, it could include only Shein and Temu, or it could also include, let's say, the European and French fast fashion brands. And there is also another proposal of the...
So what do you do in that case? For instance, if, let's say, you've got the sporting goods outlets, Decathlon, which sell a lot of clothes, a lot of cheap clothes.
Fast fashion, too.
No, of course.
And so will Decathlon be banned from advertising?
I mean, it could happen, and we hope it will happen. I mean, the idea of this law is not to punish any company. The idea of this law is to incentive companies to stop adopting, let's say, harmful practices. And it's not about Decathlon, about Shein, about any other brand. It's about having, a textile economy that is more fair. And that's enable companies to stay in France or to stay in Europe, to create, a circular economy and an economy that works for the people and for the companies. And for the moment, we don't have this competitive advantage for companies to stay. It's more easy and beneficial for companies to go in Bangladesh or in Tunisia, for instance, where you have very low wages. In Bangladesh, the minimum wages is $100 per month. In France, it's 15 times that. So at some point, and this is the other big proposal of this legislation. So this legislation has this interdiction of publicity, but there is also a bonus malus system that is for us very important because, on the one hand, it will tax the companies that have, let's say, harmful practices. That create overconsumptions that produce all over the world, but not in Europe, not in France. And on the other hand, the money that comes from this tax, which comes to French, let's say, virtuous companies. And it's basically what we completely defend at Impact France Movement, and we will continue to be mobilized in the next months for having a quick and ambitious law.
The advertising part is really, really big because basically these companies are pushing addiction. We overconsume fashion. If we stop making clothes today, we have enough new clothes on the planet to dress ourselves in new clothes every day until 2050. We have an overconsumption and overproduction problem. And the advertising, of course, pushes that addiction. But banning the advertising is an interesting study. I'd love to see how it impacted, the banning of alcohol and the banning of cigarette advertising. Did that really impact consumption of alcohol and cigarettes? I'm not so sure. I see lots of kids smoking in the streets, even though they don't see the ads anymore of like Joe Camel smoking his cool cigarette. So will banning H&M and Zara from advertising change the way young people shop? I don't think so.
All right. Well, it should be pointed out. And by the way, I noticed that Malo Bourrel-Wigger is sporting a nice cotton T-shirt for this program. It turns out that polyester is the new cotton. Overtaking as the fabric of choice for the 21st century. According to these statistics published by the environmental group Plan A, polyester, which is plastic, and plastic, which winds up in the ocean. And that's where we can turn to Nice and Rasmus Nordqvist, who is attending that UN Oceans conference. You're downstream from this debate, literally here. Without going into the specifics of the French bill that's on offer, when it comes to Europe, legislation, do you see it as something that, right now, what's being discussed, is it, as was said earlier by Pierre Condamine, pro-environment or protectionist, what's being thought of when it comes to fast fashion?
I would say that many people try to make it about protectionism and try and make it about this new term of ultra-fast fashion. But I think it's really true what's being said in the studio, that this is about a business model, about putting too many new collections out to the consumer and through advertising, creating this need of constant renewal of your wardrobe all the time, new. And yes, we have a serious problem with Shein, with Temu, but it was an existing problem before with also European players. I mean, the problem has been that, I mean, I worked in the fashion business before entering into politics, and I can say when I went out in the business in the 90s, huge companies made 4 collections a year. And now when you look around, whether it's the budget companies or more expensive ones, there's all the time new collections in store and online for people to shop. And that's where we have to start to do something about it. It is a change of a business model. It's a change of the entire industry we need to see. But in Europe, many people want to talk about the Chinese problem, which is for sure serious, but it's not the only one.
And can you answer Dana Thomas's question about whether or not a ban on advertisement will make a difference?
I would have to see how it's being done because, I mean, advertising today is something different than when you go 10 or 15 years back, because you're advertising through influencers, micro-influencers, and so forth. I think what we need to do is actually to do regulate materials. First of all, I'm really happy that we succeeded with the new waste frame directive now to put a place the EPR schemes, which can be modulated not just based on the quantity, but also on the business model behind. But second, we need the eco-design directive to put in place to see how can we regulate materials? How can we get the petrochemical polymers out? I mean, the polyester you were talking about, because that is the real problem. Materials has gone down in price, especially also after the war in Ukraine with cheap Russian oil on the market. Polyester gets cheaper and cheaper, and that's why they can produce clothes so cheap that people buy it, they wear it once, twice, and they throw it out. You don't even think about washing anymore because people can buy it so cheap.
You mentioned there the fact that here it's often billed as part of the rivalry, you might say, with China. There's been Donald Trump's push to stop the loophole on tax-free small parcels coming from China. Been pushed back by Europeans. By 2026, they are expecting to have legislation in place. That has dented plans by Shein to go public on the London Stock Exchange. Instead, the e-commerce giant eyeing a Hong Kong IPO. Judging by the numbers, there should be plenty of takers. Shein's French representatives declining the France 24 debates invitation to sit down at this table for a discussion, instead inviting consumers in the last days to promotional events. There was one in the Paris working-class suburb of Saint-Denis under the slogan, "Why should fashion be a luxury?" And we heard a point there mentioned by Rasmus Nordqvist a moment ago, and that is how advertising is done. Among the targets of the new legislation are not just television advertisements, but also influencers. People like Magali Berda, who regularly tells her 1.8 million Instagram followers about the virtues of Shein. Dana Thomas, these influencers, how do you regulate that?
You can't regulate.
Talk about product placement.
You can't regulate
that.
Subtle
it is.
And you know what's really amazing is that, you know, when Fashionopolis, I wrote Fashionopolis, it came out in 2019, right before COVID, Temu and Shein didn't even exist yet. Or if Shein existed, it was so baby, nobody had heard of it. And it has grown in that 5 years to such a level that the EU is now passing, that France is passing laws to try to regulate this company because it's flooding the market. It's grown so dramatically. The difference between Shein and Temu and something like Zara and H&M, of course, is that it is purely e-commerce and the others have stores. So even if we stop advertising and you stop the influencers and you stop the Facebook page, you know, Facebook ads on pages and all of that, you still can walk down the street and see H&M and Zara stores, but you won't see any Temu and Shein. And that's where it's suddenly looking more protectionist than really trying to tackle the problem. We still have Gap. There's, you know, it's not just the Europeans. There's Gap. Levi's is a fast fashion company today. They put out 6 billion pairs of jeans a year. And they make them all overseas, or most of them, and they sell them to you already half worn out so you can throw them away in 3 months and get a new pair. That's fast fashion. So, you know, there's a lot of companies that this is not impacting. It's really targeting the Chinese.
And the Chinese, again, who've proven pretty good, Pierre Condamine, at fighting their corner when it comes to pushing back against this legislation and watering it down.
Yeah, there has been heavy lobbying from Shein. Of course, as you say, they recruited a former interior minister. But I wouldn't say it worked that well, because as we see, the legislation is still targeting them a lot. But what we have not talked about that much is the lobbying from, you know, traditional EU fast fashion brands, sorry, like Zara, H&M, Primark. They have been heavily lobbying also the Senate and the National Assembly. And that's why now we have a text that is less ambitious than the primary objective. And they've been there. And it's also funny because we've been criticizing the lobbying of Shein. And that's normal, because that's not the way it should happen. But we haven't heard in the media, in the press, people also criticizing what has been done by Primark. Primark has also been on TV
Irish
shows.
An Irish company.
Yeah. And they've also been saying, we're not fast fashion. We are not concerned by the law. They said that in public. But then we saw, you know, the proposition, the technical notes, the amendment they sent to decision makers to try to lighten the ambition of the law. So that's also a big issue.
Rasmus Nordqvist, at the European level, this distinction, I suppose it splits the European Parliament.
Yes, and I think, first of all, as well as because a lot of my good colleagues doesn't have the knowledge about the business and the business models behind it. So I think it's really important what's said really right now in the studio is there's of course a distinction, because what's coming now is coming in a pace that is never seen before. But the whole nature of these companies, whether European, Chinese or American, that's what we need to change. So I think there's a lot to do, a lot of lobbyism need from the good people you have in the studio with you as well, because there's knowledge here, and that's a knowledge gap that's very easy for some people to make it all about Shein and Temu, and we should talk about them, but let's not forget the companies here already. And we had a problem before COVID as well with fast fashion, what we see in the stores on the high streets all over Europe, with collections, new collections in stores every week. That is the problem, that we're creating this demand for constantly renewal. That is the problem, and that's where we have to start working on the legislative part.
Malo Bourad-Wigger, how do you legislate this?
Well, I mean, you have two options. The first option would be to, let's say, play the US administration game with having, how would you say that in English? Tax on imports, on global tax on imports. You can put 100% taxes coming from textile imports coming from China, for instance. That would, of course, lead to commercial war, and I'm not sure we would really be in a good position as Europe right now to engage in a war with commercial war.
And so this
China.
Concept, by the way, in the French legislation of a kind of a carbon tax.
It's not a carbon tax.
I mean, it's not exactly a carbon tax.
It's not a carbon tax. It's a bonus malus system. I think it's important to have that in mind. It's not a punition for companies. It's a proposal for companies to. An incentive for companies to adapt their practices to what we want, to what we need. And it's not just about, okay, yeah, we have to be good and we have to produce in good condition. It's also because we have to protect our workers. When you have, I won't quote any brands. When you have a fast fashion or a ultra fast fashion brand that comes in the city center of your city, at some point is two or three, let's say SME working in the textile sector that close. There is also this economic point that is very important, and it is the case in France. I come from a city where we can see that a lot, where the city center is completely devitalized because also of the situation, and it's the case for textile, it's the case for other other industries. The idea is not to punish some companies because we don't like them. If Shein tomorrow decides to adapt its practices and to stop fast fashion practices, would be okay. Would be okay. It's not about nationality. It's about practices.
You know, the Europeans are doing their best to get around all this as well. Even when they've passed EU laws, I heard about one major European fast fashion brand that is baked into its budget for the next 5 years. The fines it's going to pay for non-compliance, because it's cheaper to pay for the fines for non-compliance than it is to change the business model and be compliant. So they've just said, we don't care. They're going to fine us. We're going to pay it. We're still going to make heaps and heaps of money. When I was working on Fashionopolis, the second richest person in the world was the owner of Zara. If you're getting that rich by making clothes that we wear seven times or less and throw away, there is something wrong with the business model on for us and the planet, for planet and humanity. It's good for him. It's not good for us.
And we talked earlier about the influencers for brands like the e-commerce giant Shein. There's also old school names to polish the image of the brand. Germany's former European commissioner, Günther Oettinger, who defends Shein in Brussels now in Berlin for a living. And as was, again, mentioned earlier in the conversation, former Interior Minister Christophe Castaner, former Élysée Palace insider, by the way, at a journalist roundtable on Tuesday evening devoted to the Ocean Summit in Nice, the journalist Hugo Clément asked President Macron about Castaner. Macron got a little bit prickly.
Il est conseiller stratégique en France de la marque chinoise. Il n'y a rien qui vous gêne?
C'est un peu nul ce que vous faites.
Non, c'est pas nul.
C'est un peu nul, je vous le dis, par rapport au débat.
Pardon, d'abord parce que c'est une question légitime. Il a été ministre de l'Intérieur, il travaille aujourd'hui pour
Chine. C'est vrai, mais d'accord, mais il a été ministre de l'Intérieur il y a X années. C'est un homme maintenant libre, il a donné beaucoup de son temps, de son énergie à la chose publique.
Reporters ask lame questions, don't they, Pierre Condamine?
Yeah, maybe too many questions. What can I say? I think it's...
Why was he upset like that?
I think, yeah. I don't know. To be honest, I don't know. And that triggers a bit of fear in me, because what he said, and you didn't show this in the clips, but he also said that Macron met with Castaner, like, I don't know when, but like after he was hired by Shein, because now he's working in Marseille. So Macron said, I met him as part of his job in Marseille, but not as part of his job in Shein. And that's where, you know, there is sort of the borders are blurry, and we don't know what he's doing. We in France, we don't have regulation on lobbying from former public decision makers that are strict enough. And so what he's doing, Castaner, is totally free. And he could have talked about Macron, about Shein. He doesn't have to declare it. There is no transparency about this. Yeah, it's weird the way Macron just wanted to escape the topic and not talk about it. That's something about transparency. Also.
Rasmus Nordqvist, tell us about Brussels when it comes to lobbying and fast fashion. A man like Günther Oettinger, is there a problem with a former commissioner getting paid by an e-commerce company?
I mean, on European level, we have some regulation on what you can do when you step out of office. But I think the whole problem is showing is how much money there is in this business that you can pay people like that to go out and try and influence people like me and my colleagues. I mean, lobbyism is everywhere, and especially from the big industries, of course, agriculture, chemistry, and fashion. They are all over Brussels, and of course they work hard to get their ID through, and luckily enough you have to be transparent when you are in an office like mine. And I mean, it's not just in this case, it's around in all politics that money unfortunately matters, and people, when companies put so much money into lobbyism, it's because it works quite often.
Reaction from the French Environment Minister, Malo Bourrel-Uyghur, was to say that the passage of this bill by the Senate is great news. They're hoping that it quickly can be go on to the next step, and that they're going to check to see if the bill is compatible with the French Constitution and with EU norms. What does she mean when she says that? Is that just routine, or is that a way to water down the bill?
Just to specify, we mostly talk about the proposal about publicity, the prohibition of publicity. Today, in the French system, you have to respect specific EU regulations because it's EU law. And there is a law at the EU level that could, and we are still trying to verify it, impeach the government and the parliament to pass the specific disposal on publicity. The minister, Agnès Pannier-Runacher, a minister of the environment for France, declared that they will have the commission and they will try, if it's not possible for now, to adopt the legislation as it is right now. So a total prohibition of publicity for fast fashion brands. They will try, the French government will try to make it, to change the EU law and to make it possible so that France, but also a lot of member states could apply this proposal and could forbid publicity for fast fashion brands.
Pierre Condamine, the government's reaction to it, just standard routine, or is there an issue there?
It's always hard to say, because when last year it was adopted in the National Assembly, we were all extremely happy because it really paved the way towards what could be sustainable fashion. But then we waited for more than a year before the legislation going through the Senate. And this is not the way it usually happens. So we're a bit cautious.
Well, because Parliament was dissolved, right?
Parliament was dissolved, yes, but that was in June. Now we're in June, the year after, and we finally have the Senate voting the legislation. So we're a bit cautious when they said we're going to do technical check and then we're going to through with it. Because who knows, the government might fall, you know, in 2 weeks or even 2 months. And then what will be the political will of the next government to take on this topic and to move forward with the legislation?
And one of the most important things to remember is that the fashion industry in France is one of the most powerful businesses in the world. And they are in tight with the political circles. Bernard Arnault is best friends with Macron, and Madame Macron is wearing Louis Vuitton.
Wait, Bernard Arnault, that's luxury goods, right? That's not fast fashion.
But it is, in its way, because to keep up with the fast fashion schedule of Zara and H&M and all of those, the luxury fashion brands have also sped up their production. When Galliano left Dior, he was doing 36 collections a year. Now I have people who tell me they put out a new collection of some sort every week, which is exactly the same pace as Zara. None of these people want to see any kind of legislation on fashion, period. Bernard Arnault, all the way down to Temu. And the minute you start regulating it, then it's going to trickle into the entire business. And it's going to start telling the big fat cats who dress the first lady, you can't do that either. And they don't want to hear it. So the lobbying against all of this is really strong here and also in the United States. The New York Fashion Act has been sitting in Albany for years waiting to get passed. I don't know where it stands now, but it was introduced a while ago, and it's still sitting there. The EU has passed a few laws. One of the most important ones that France passed, and then the EU's picking up on, is that they can't throw away or destroy unsold clothes, which has given a whole rise to flash sales online, because they still overproduce, but now they can't just toss it and burn it, throw water on it. But they don't want any regulation. They like having freedom and no politicians or legislators telling them what to do. It's been a Wild West business since it was invented 250 years ago, and they want to keep it that way.
And Rasmus Nordqvist, right now, if you do a head count in the European Parliament and the European Commission, what are the odds? You heard earlier in our conversation, Malo Bourrel-Wegger talking about how the French government is hoping that the EU will pick up on French legislation. What are the odds that they will?
I actually think we have some obvious chances. First of all, as I just said, the Waste Framework Directive, which has just been negotiated, actually opens up for the extended producer responsibility to be modulated around business models. This is huge when it comes to this. Then we have the Circular Economy Act, which the Commission will propose in 2026. And I really hope that there's going to be a push from France also, together with myself and others, to actually make it matter when it comes to textile and fashion as well. Because we need to get the virgin polyester out. And by doing that, we will also change the business model behind fast fashion, because if materials get more expensive, they cannot produce the way they do it today. So I really hope for a push for that. We have the opportunities when the Circular Economy Act is coming. There's the eco-design at the moment, which as well got to put demands on recycled content. And I can assure you that I'm pushing for these targets to be as high as possible, because this is how we can change the business as well. Just by talking about Chinese companies and looking into how can we do something about the advertising, fine, but we also need to talk about the root of this, and that is too cheap polyester flooding the market, not just in Europe, but all over the world. And that's what we're talking about here in Nice as well, actually, because of the microplast we're finding everywhere in the ocean also.
Malo Bourrel-Wegger, the customer is king, right? So people want clothes that are cheap and delivered fast.
That's a good question. Customer first, yes, but publicity.
You're hearing there Rasmus Nordqvist calling for what? The ban of polyester or the phasing out of polyester. Is that ever going to fly?
We'll see. I wouldn't to say we'll see.
Dana's shaking her head.
No, but our vision is to say we have to incentive companies to change. And so this legislation goes in the good direction, and we should continue to go in this direction at French level, but also at EU level. I think it's important to say that again. It's important not to punish companies, but to incentive them to adapt their practices.
Pierre Contamine, you agree?
You said consumer is king, and I would like to point out that you pointed out that my title is overproduction. And why am I talking about overproduction? It's because we are over-consuming, not because, you know, we need more clothes, because we doubled the size and we need more clothes. We are over-consuming because companies are accelerating the trend of fashion, because they are spending millions and billions in advertising. So what we need to understand is that if people buy something, that's not because they sort of objectively need it. It's because they have companies behind them making them believe that they need it. And that's what
But they like the fact that it's cheap.
They like the fact that it's cheap, but that's why we need to sort of, the like that you mentioned is created by the companies. They're putting images in the brain saying, oh, but you need this because it's cheap, because it's brand new, and tomorrow we'll have a brand new design that is even better and that you need to buy. And so that's why we need sort of to debunk and to create new ways of thinking, new ways of wanting things that does not rely on having new things every day. And because if we buy new things every day, that's because it's cheap. And because it's cheap because that relies on disastrous environmental and social ways of producing. And that's the whole system of fast fashion that we need to regulate, that we need to slow down, and to promote sustainable practices. And that's what the law should be about.
And just speaking about this issue of overproduction, fast fashion and fast forward means French charity shops are, depending on how you look at it, overwhelmed or starved, consumers dropping off items that are unusable for those charity shops, opting instead to sell the good stuff online. Dana Thomas, that sort of circular economy that Pierre is talking about, what do you do? How do you incite people to solicit their charity shop?
Well, one of the biggest secondhand, if not the biggest secondhand online marketplace is Vinted. And Vinted is the young people's marketplace, resale marketplace for fashion, where they're selling, reselling their fast fashion. They're reselling their Zara, they're reselling their H&M, they're reselling their Shein and Temu if it still holds together. And they're selling it for just a couple bucks, but it's getting, therefore, a second life and a third life and a fourth life. Vinted is exploding as a marketplace.
And that's a good news story.
That's a good news story. That's a really good news story. And so young people are actually adopting the let's not just throw it away, let's rewear. They don't go to charity shops, but they go online and they look, on Vinted, which is fantastic.
Rasmus Nordqvist, idea of how you change mentalities. What's it like in your native Denmark?
But it's exactly the same, and it's the same all over Europe. And also the point you just touched upon, I mean, many of these garments, when they come to charity shops, they are unsellable there. And you cannot even use it when you want to recycle and recycle for fiber to fiber, because you don't know what's in it. There's chemicals, there's all this stuff. So it's unusual. But I think it's an important point to look into more. I mean, materials, yes, it's the right way to go, but also to look into to life cycles. I mean, repairability, to make demands on companies actually producing these things, that it has to be able to repair if something is broken, that they actually have to tell you how long can a certain garment last. And I'm sure that some of this fast fashion cannot last long because it's getting destroyed when you wash it. So stuff like that we can actually regulate on EU level, and that's what we need. We need an internal market for the good fashion. I mean, I have to be honest with you. I love fashion. I think it's a fantastic business. What I hate is to see the fast fashion, the way it's destroying, first of all, the planet, people working in it, but also that it's destroying the whole creativity of an industry that was actually quite amazing some years back.
The right to repair, by the way, there's been a French bill. It's gone into effect. Members of your association, Metal Bourg-Louis, what do they think of it? Do they like it?
Well, of course, I like it. We are very lucky in France. We are pioneer in terms of circular economy. We have this great legislation. We have a lot of businesses that started and continue to use this. And to go in this industry, I will stop here.
So that's good. And just one final point: there are ways to find out if stuff passes the smell test or whether it's just greenwashing. The Australian app Good on You's become the bible for consumers with a conscience. Dana Thomas, it offers, I believe, three categories for shoppers: planet, people, animal rating. Do you use that kind of thing?
I don't use it because I actually know this stuff, because this is how I spend my days, reading reports and investigating brands. But I know a lot of people who do. And when they get the green light, they go for it. When they don't, that's not always buy it. There are also a lot of great platforms now on places like Net-a-Porter, where they'll have a green edit, where they've done the work for you and said, if you really want to shop something green and it's not greenwashing, we've vetted this for you and it's good to go. Like the app, and a lot of the apps have that. It's a really hard battle. I got a report about a year ago about wool being the worst material out there, so polluting and horrible. You should never wear wool. And I started hopping up and down, going, "This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever read." Wool today makes up 1% of our clothes, and you're wearing a wool suit, and I'm wearing a wool suit. So that just shows you how like everybody else is wearing polyester. 2/3 of our clothes contain polyester, which is petroleum. That's why we're never getting rid of it, because the petroleum industry is the most powerful industry out there. And if they're going to have EVs taking away their gasoline, they're going to make more polyester. But, you know, we can't give up. We've got to keep fighting and trying to convince people that this is the right thing to do, to care about your clothes, to invest in them, to love and cherish them, keep them longer, repair them and wear them, and buy good stuff. Whether you look on the app to see if it's got a green light, you go on to Net-a-Porter or My Teresa and you look at their green edit, Or you shop secondhand. Wash your clothes in cold water so they last longer. You know, little things like that make a huge difference. We can all have a positive impact on the industry.
And we'll leave it with that clarion call there from Dana Thomas. Many thanks. I want to thank as well Malo Bourrel, Uyghur, Pierre Gondamine, Rasmus Nordqvist for joining us from Nice at the UN Ocean Conference. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.